So today, where I'm going to go with that is this is a little bit of a follow-up to the talk that I gave last month, and I know some of you weren't here, and that's fine. It won't matter that much. I'll do a little bit of a recap or integrate this into that. Part of the Buddhist teaching is the Eightfold Path, and many of you are familiar with that. And anybody here there's an Eightfold Path class going on here. Is anybody part of that class? I'm just curious. Okay. In the Eightfold Path, there's three sections to it. The view, there's what's called sila, or ethical, or what I like to use the word integrity in our behavior, and then training, heart-mind training. So what I want to talk about today is really the view. And that's would be right view and right intention, and particularly the view. It's the first of the Eightfold Path. Because I want to encourage you, and it came out in some of the things people said about this ex sort of expansion of what we experience in some ways. And I find that often why I want to talk about this, and people know me, I talk about it in different ways, is I find people often have certainly limited views of themselves, but also limited views of the potential of practice, limited views of what we're actually doing here or what's possible to do in the practice. And as Susan said, the limited view of the small self is often what's what we get stuck in. I often, and I did this last month, I like to use the phrase that this is a process of shifting from ego-based identity to awareness-based presence. So over time, there's more and more of a shift from the limitation of the ego-based identity to the potential expansiveness, possibility, and freedom of the awareness-based presence. So I want to unpack those a little bit, I hope, today. So I have a question for you guys again. So I have these two categories, ego-based identity and awareness-based presence. I'd just like to hear some, when I say ego-based identity, are there words you associate with that? Just words, qualities, feelings, anything? Yeah.
Easily offended.
Easily offended.
Limited.
Limited.
It's all about me.
It's all about me.
Fearful.
What?
Fractured. Fractured.
Fractured.
Separate.
Separate. Would familiar also be common and familiar? would also work. Those are all great. And what about when I say awareness-based presence? Qualities, feelings, associations you might have with that phrase.
Wisdom.
Wisdom.
Connection.
Connection.
Compassion.
Compassion.
Wholeness.
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 Wholeness. Okay, so that kind of shows the energetic or quality change in this. And then the question is, and I'm probably not going to be able to answer this, is how do you get from A to B? What does that mean? We can only really put out pointers to that, or you could also say that all of practice is about getting from A to B. And of course, B isn't somewhere else. Awareness-based presence isn't somewhere else. It's not someone else. It's not even something else. And I'll get back more to that. So last time I talked I use the transpersonal psychology model of prepersonal, personal, and transpersonal. So I'm going to allude that to that a little bit, because what I'm talking about, this ego-based identity to more of an experience of awareness-based presence, is really the transition from our personal experience to our transpersonal experience, you might say. All these words are a little inadequate, but I'm going to sort of do my best. But I'll just do a little recap on this. So I'm not going to talk much about the pre-personal, although it's important, because the pre-personal is what often influences our life. It's often the source of our suffering, our patterns of suffering, and our habits that and behaviors that were brought up that cause suffering for us and others. But as I was thinking about this, this isn't a new thought, but I was just touched about this today, about how, once again, about how vulnerable we are coming into this world as humans. And we remain vulnerable. We always remain vulnerable, but as children, remain vulnerable for years. And part of growing up is learning how to manage and protect and understand that and what happens to us. So if you think about it, this being, a sensitive, vulnerable, tender, soft, probably confused being is brought into the world, and with this young mind, this undeveloped mind, has to find ways to cope and manage and figure it out. And so there's we have a limited ability to do that, but we create all kinds of, we have all kinds of wounds and traumas and difficulties and confusion. And we do the best we can with our defenses and our armors and the way we understand things. But often it's fairly limited in its ability to actually work well. And also in that phase, we develop we enhance a lot of the characteristics of our personality. I didn't say this last time, but this time I'm thinking about these three stages as ways of dealing with our vulnerability and being living creatures and how we manage and understand that vulnerability. So I think we all understand that we have these issues. We have this conditioning, these patterns that arise. So then we kind of incorporate more the personal level, which you can think of is how we understand and manage this mysterious life we have, this vulnerability, this sensitivity as an adult. And we have more things we need to do as an adult. As an adult, we need to be effective in relationships and livelihood enough. We have to know how to support ourselves and support others as well. And so we learn other ways to manage our vulnerability and our feelings, and we learn more ways to manage our pre-personal issues as well. And the hallmarks, really, especially in modern Western society, of how we do this relate to education, training, skill building. We're familiar with those things. And it's also associated with effort, will, control, becoming, learning, you know, things like that. Words like that are come into how we learn to be in the world. So we're all adults here, and so much of our life now, day to day, is expressed in this so-called personal level, and we bring our pre-personal into this as well. So although the pain, I would say, that often originates in the pre-personal experience often leads us to practice, our fears, our anxieties, our feeling of disconnection, our perhaps recurring loneliness, stress habits, repeated, what we see as repeated failures, you know, all the things that happen in life often have a sort of early association, or simply the persistent feeling that there is more to life than what we've learned and gathered so far. And that persistent feeling that there is more is sometimes called the call of the Dharma. It's really the call to us to explore more. But what I want to get at here is, for most of our practice is generated from and begins and is actually practiced within this personal level, from this personal view, from this personal experience. And in the conventional world that we are embedded in, that's really all there is. In the conventional world, that's all there is, pretty much, wouldn't you say? There's, and it's really the only way to be. So most people practice Dharma from the viewpoint of the personal. And yet, the Buddha Dharma is inviting us to expand beyond that. And that came out in a variety of things people said. So it means being able to make that, so it's not exactly a transition, but to make that transition from the personal view to the what I'm calling the transpersonal view or the Dharma view. The personal view in Buddhism is called Sakyadiddhi. There's a word for it. It's often translated as self-view. Ajahn Sumedho has a wonderful chapter on Sakyadiddhi in his book Sound of Silence. But most of us we're both so identified with the Sakyadiddhi or the self view or personal view, but I think we're also often afraid to step beyond it. So transpersonal, which I was using this word last time, and what I mean it to mean is going beyond the personality and self-identity. Going beyond personality and self-identity. This is a huge, huge what? Possibility. This is a huge potential. This is a huge undertaking. And this is an incredible gift of the Dharma, to lay out a path to make this more possible for us. So how do we understand and manage our vulnerability in our life from beyond personality, and beyond self-identity?
Could you just, to back up just a bit, could you define what pre-personal is?
Yeah. Again, pre-personal is is what we experience in childhood, pretty much. It's it's the formation of our personality. It's the experiences that we have in many ways before we have ways of knowing really how to deal with it, and that we carry those patterns, neuroses, and so forth through our whole life. So I'm just giving this talk. It's things you've heard before, I'm sure. But I see that people are pretty comfortable in their self-view. You suffer in your self-view. I'm not saying that. But to take on the task, I'm not saying anybody in particular, but this is sort of a general observation, to take on the task of exploring what it's actually like to begin to have that recede a little bit more into the background and have the ability to be here and now with awareness and presence rather than it through the lens of identity and ego needs. So the second noble truth is about the cause of suffering, and one of the main things that are talked about is grasping and confusion, and particularly grasping to and being confused by a limited and mistaken sense of self. And so this is the key place, the subtle, key, nuanced place in moving towards greater and greater liberation. Because the Buddha's path is a path of liberation. It's a path of seeing beyond the constructed, limited ideas we've developed through our pre-personal childhood culture and so forth. So why I want to bring that up is to say, and you know this, but this is a liberative practice. And the rules are different. The rules are different for the transpersonal. The worlds are different when you step beyond identity, the personal realm, into what we might call the Dharma view or the transpersonal. But people bring the rules of the personal into what operates completely differently. So the personal, again, the personal realm is defined by personal discipline, personal effort, personal insight. Especially in the modern West, it's defined by linear progression, about gain, about doing. It's defined by learning and improvement, getting better, maybe being the best. It's defined by comparing. It's defined by really how we spend much of our lives in that kind of mode. And it's the ultimate refinement of the ego-based identity. Again, are people familiar with those kind of approaches to practice? People bring all those approaches to practice, and that's okay. It can be helpful for a while. But the transpersonal or the Dharma view is stepping into something much bigger. And this is a common metaphor. I actually haven't used it in a while, but I love it because I used to be a gardener. But it's a lot like gardening, and the personal level is being the gardener. The personal level is being the gardener, that when we become the gardeners of our true self, of our own potential, and the gardener creates the best conditions for our garden to grow. And that's much of what our practice is, creating the best conditions for our garden to grow. But the transpersonal and the Dharma view is like the garden. Can you make the garden grow? Can you pull that plant right out of the ground? Can you guarantee that those seeds you've planted will sprout? No, there's a bigger force. There's a bigger thing going on. A bigger thing than your efforts, than your personality, than who you think you are, than who you think other people are. We can only create the best conditions over and over and over again. And that's what meditation and compassion practice is. That's what all those things are. But you, if you think that they are the end in themselves, you will forget. You'll do all the conditions, and then you'll go in the house and you'll forget the garden. The point is the garden. The point is the life and the bigger potential fruiting and becoming alive and being known. This makes sense? This is mainly, I'm just sort of trying to inspire you and open your eyes again and again to the bigger view. Because it's so easy for us to get in the small view. Small view of self and me, what I'm getting, what I'm doing, and forget that there's a point at which we are actually surrendering to something else. There is, I love this phrase. Those of you who've practiced with me will have heard it before. It comes from a Zen teacher, and he says, enlightenment is an accident, and meditation makes you accident prone. It's happening by something, again, bigger than ourselves, and we're so self-oriented, we think, my ego is, well, our ego is really thinks it can do it all, and it will get out there and really try to do it. But that point where we actually trust and surrender and open to the deeper process that is within us, in our own consciousness, in our own being, and shared among us. So we create the best conditions, and then we let go. We create the best conditions, and then we allow. We create the best conditions, and then we open. Again and again and again. We come back to the here and now with our mindfulness, and we open to the here and now. So, it's a kind of paradigm shift, you could say. I also argue that we're all transiting through these three levels all the time. And if you think, I want more of that transpersonal, where do I get it? Where do I find it? It's here, always and forever. It's here, always and forever. It's actually what's more real than your identity and your personality. We just need to wake up out of our reactive state, out of our limiting beliefs, out of our limiting identity, and there's a whole new ballgame available. Sometimes. Usually briefly. So take a moment, just Tara Brach calls this a sacred pause. And really a sacred pause is that moment to allow yourself to allow, to allow yourself to be, to stop the struggle for a moment, to stop the being a slave to the agenda of our conditioned ego, so and so forth. So take a moment, literally, just stop. Don't have to do anything. Just be. Just let be. Let whatever is be. Feelings, thoughts, sounds. Let be. breath. Let be. Nothing to fix. Is there a struggle? What if you gave up all your struggle? So this opening, which is so simple and so available, so fleeting usually. And those moments where you're not being pushed. You're actually open. It's a deeper way of being, a deeper way of knowing perhaps. It's a kind of attunement that we need to learn. So in that little invitation, simple invitation I made for a sacred pause to just let be, did anybody notice anything?
I noticed that just before you did that, myself personal was like, I can't wait till question time so I can ask her now. How in my daily life do I move in a situation? Give me an example to go from the personal to the transpersonal. I've got to figure out how to, that's, you know, the personal. Mm-hmm. And it felt so good to just say, okay, I can just sit here and be. Thank you.
And we don't trust it.
No, I don't. I trust it one bit. You know? I'll be back in there, but yeah. You know, like you said, for the fleeting moment, nice to know that. You
and hopefully, you can trust that fleeting moment. Yeah. Trust the fleeting moment, because in that moment, there's this, right?
Yeah.
There's this relief. There's this moving from this to that. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, we come in, well, how do I do that? How do I get more? How do I, you know? And, of course, what is that?
Personal self.
It's not wrong and it's not bad, the personal level. We just have to know it and see it for what it is. And that's that's what I'm inviting. See it for what it is. Take advantage of it, what gifts it has. But realize that we're more than that. We are so much more than that. And the only way to access the more than that is to not be caught in the pre-personal or personal. And again, we will only access it. You already, as I said, you're already accessing it. You might not recognize it, know it. We can only, you usually do it for fleeting moments. But we can hold the view. The hold the view invites us to have more of those fleeting moments. Invites us to trust a different way. So one way I sort of instructions for this that I like to give, which is different again, and then all of our efforts and our disciplines and our doing and our which again have their place. Believe me, they have their place, and they often build. Again, it's the gardener creating good conditions in many ways. But again, once the conditions are there, can you open? So I like to say, some of you have heard this, first is let in. We spend, a lot of our struggle is barricading our experience. And again, I brought this up, that we may need a lot of help just to get to this stage, because we have so many defenses, traumas, difficulty, and so forth, that there's a profound healing that happens just at this simple level. Profound, to let it in, meaning let our life in, let our experience in, let our feelings in. But this doesn't happen easily. I was listening to, it was actually an ad for the upcoming Science and Non-Dual Conference next week in San Jose, and they had asked all these people, what does it mean to be human? And they asked Robert Thurman, who you might know, a great Buddhist teacher, and he said, not turning away from sensitivity. Not turning away from sensitivity. So we spend our life turning away from it and think we can then be free. But I wasn't actually, this is interesting. As I say this, you know, I was thinking about this. I just see how much of the task is just this. Having the trust, having the strength, having the awareness, having the love and compassion, having the courage. To just be alive and feel and be present. We're always again trying to fix it, manipulate it. I'll take that, but not that. This will be okay, but not that. This is it's both a healing and a transforming and an awakening task. Healing, transforming, and awakening. I'm still working on it a lot. And I find more and more, you know, through life, decades, getting older, I find the places that still want to turn away from my sensitivity, as Robert Thurman said. Oh, maybe I'll add this because it's poignant to me. Peter Levine, if some of you know, who's the creator of somatic experiencing, was one of the people they asked this question, what does it mean to be human? And he was in a big overstuffed chair and he kind of leaned back and he said, trauma. Trauma everywhere. And that to me is the first noble truth. First noble truth. I always liked, you know, the first noble truth. Well, let's get past that to liberation, which we are working that way, but not until we embrace it, embrace the first noble truth. We keep turning away from it. So I could stop there, but I'm going to add a couple other. So this let it in. One of my teachers, Lama Suryadas, said, he used to say let it in. And, you know, people always say let go, right? You're let go. He said, how can you let go if you haven't let in? And let in really means be aware of, be present with. So let in, then let be. We let in, but then where struggle starts. The struggle starts. Not that, not this. Remember, this is the advanced practice I'm talking about. We still have our mindfulness every day. We still have our compassion practices. We still have so many things to help us. But this, again, is once we've tended the garden, can we let the garden grow in the space and openness it needs? We've given it sunshine and water and care. So let in, let be. And this is just, again, let be your living experience. And then the third is let go when it's time to go. It's not push it away. It's just, it will go. So let it go. Moments of extreme happiness will go. Moments of deep depression will go. Moments of connection will go. And new ones will come. And then the last step I call let flow, which means we're in this incredible river of existence. And can we be in the flow of it, in harmony with it? As hard as it is, as crazy as it is, as disturbing as it can be, and as many of you are having, the world today seems very disturbing in so many ways. But here we are. There's an invitation, and the Buddha gave it to us. So take it up. And of course, the caveat is it's this part of the flow, maybe, is this fluid getting stuck, getting unstuck, getting stuck, getting unstuck, feeling connected and disconnected and connected, feeling open and expansive and closing down. And we begin to sort of see the rhythm of it, see it happening, and having more trust again. Trust in that, those moments of relief, of release. The Buddha talked about awakening as release. Now that's easy, right? That's simple. And yet we think, oh, you know, I gotta work really hard. I gotta get that thing. I gotta get it. I gotta get it. How about release? Now. Here. And we come back 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times. And we start to live from that more often. We start to relate from that more often. We start to hold the tragedy of the world with that more often. And it's actually only from that deeper place that there's enough compassion and love and understanding to be with it. So does the ego go away?
When?
What?
I mean, you said, does it go away?
Does the ego go away?
You mean ever?
Ever, yeah. What do you think? I'm getting a no over here.
No.
I would say no. Again, I just want to say it doesn't need to be the controller all the time. It starts to actually trust you. It also starts to trust something deeper. But the ego is a sort of structure that's built into the mind. No problem. No problem. So, okay. I'm going to stop there. But let's just take a moment to sit in silence. And then we'll have some time for comments, questions, other investigations. So take this sacred pause again, this invitation to not effort, not get it right, to not be the best meditator, to not really be mindful, just be. breathe. Okay, once again, take a nice breath and a nice release of breath. The breath is teaching us every breath about release, release, and being present. And this openness, this simple presence, this vast capacity for awareness, the vast spaciousness of awareness, is also the source of the vastness of compassion and love. Because it knows we're all in this together. Because it has no quarrel with anybody or anything. So from that, or the aspiration of that, allow yourself to dedicate the benefit of your practice, of your life, of practicing here together, of our efforts and our energy to the benefit of all beings, everywhere. May all beings understand the depth of their own heart. May all beings wake up to their own possibility. May all beings find insight and wisdom in the here and now.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.